Hey guys, this is Nathan Chen.
Hi, I'm Madison Hubble.
And I'm Zach Donahue.
Hi, this is Caitlin Hawaiik.
And this is Jean-Luc Baker. And
hello everybody, I'm Luca Lanotte.
And I'm Anna Cappellini.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Osmond.
Hey, this is Max N.
So bonjour, je m'appelle Morgan Cipray.
Hi, this is Vanessa James, and you're listening to Ice Talk.
The season is over. I can't believe it myself, but this marathon of an Olympic season has finally concluded last week with the World Championships in Milano. And it concluded in quite the spectacular fashion. And you know what? You don't expect anything less from figure skating. I'm Jackie Wong of rockerskating.com. It is episode 68 of Ice Talk. Last week, we had 2.5 new world champions crowned in Italy. Caitlin Osmond, Nathan Chen, and Bruno Massot is our half. Massot won his first worlds with Aliona Savchenko, who won her 6th world championships. And Papadakis and Cicerone won their 3rd world title. And Lynn Rutherford joins me for this full episode recap. Lynn, can you believe the season is over?
I can't believe the season is over. because I thought that Worlds indicated quite clearly in some respects that the season was over. We perhaps did not see in some of the disciplines quite the sparkling performances that we may have hoped for and that we may have saw at the Olympics. So I think it is apropos that this particular season comes to lurches to a conclusion.
Screeches to a halt. Well, how did you enjoy Worlds?
Well, I did enjoy Worlds. And I kind of got into it with my colleague Phil Hirsch on Ice Network because he really was very, very strong in his belief that Worlds after Olympics is a kind of a denouement you don't need. Mm-hmm. And I did not feel as strongly about it. My biggest argument was, hey, if the ISU has a member nation that wants to host Worlds and can do a good job, you know, why not? Why not hold it? What's your point? If you don't want to watch it, you know, don't watch it. But after seeing this Worlds, I really even feel stronger that there is a place to have Worlds after the Olympics, because I thought that the people in Milano, the crowd was just outstanding. I was not there. I know you were there.
Yeah.
And you kind of tweeted about how terrific they were.
Across the board, I think the skaters, the journalists, you know, the fans themselves, like they felt how electric the arena was. And, you know, it had a lot to do with a lot of Italian skaters being there and likely kind of skating for the last time. But they were very supportive of everybody, and it was really amazing to see that. And I missed a little bit of that electricity sometimes in Pyeongchang. I don't know if it's just kind of recency bias that I'm having, but like there were times in Milano where I was like, oh wow, this is it. I think I tweeted at one point I hadn't heard that kind of ovation in a crowd since I was at the short track speed skating competitions in the Olympics. So it was really something else, especially when, you know, the Carolina Costners came on and the Capellini and Lanotes came on. It was amazing, the crowds.
Yeah, and I really do think that there's something to be said for, you know, you will have athletes that retire, mm-hmm. that take time off, you know, that get injured. And that allows, or I don't know if it allows, but it kind of spurs other stars to emerge. And, you know, certainly we saw that in Milano.
Yeah.
With Nathan Chen kind of conquering his short program and moving up there to win in a really big way. We saw Hubble and Donahue really come to the fore in the dance event. You know, Caitlin Osmond sort of solidified her standing, and they were definitely worthwhile stories. So I'm going to stick with my opinion.
Yeah, you're not going to get a contrary opinion
no,
from me.
No,
I mean,
it's you know, generally speaking, the only one that sort of, you know, makes me look like a Pollyanna would be Phil Hirsch. And, you know, we were able to find each other, and you know, I'm to the positive end of him.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I
think I'm going to stick with my opinion.
I would also say that, I mean, you you said it very well there. You put it very well there that, you know, there are skaters who are retiring. There are skaters who are walking through doors that are being opened and so forth. And, you know, you have to think about this from the mentality of a lot of these skaters who, you know, training for the Olympics is an incredible part of their lives, but training in general to compete is also a huge part of their lives. And you're training for, you know, tens of thousands of hours of your life in order to go out there every competition to skate 7 minutes. And it's tough. It's a tough pill to swallow when, you know, you only have a couple of competitions every year. And like you have to look at skaters who aren't necessarily at the very top. They don't compete necessarily as much on this big stage, and these are great times for them to do it. And, you know, like you said, if you don't want to watch it, you don't have to watch it, but a lot of people watched it. So
really, I'm sticking with that very basic argument.
Yeah.
If you don't want to watch it, don't watch it. Don't buy a ticket. if the ISU has people that will organize it, they have great cities that want to host it, why not?
Yeah, exactly. Well, back to world. I'm going to work backwards from the end of the world championship. So ice dance was our final event at Worlds, and Gabriela Papadakis and Guillaume Cicerone won it, with Mazen Hubble and Zach Donahue finally making that breakthrough, like you said, with their two clean skates to win silver, and then a resurgent Kaitlin Weaver and Andrew Poggi grabbing the bronze, their third world medal. I gotta say, it wasn't the deepest field without the three of the top teams from the Olympics in Milano, but I gotta say, you know, watching the short dance and the free dance, it was a very well-skated event.
It was a very well-skated event, and, you know, there's a time when you have a post-Virtue and Moyer landscape. You know, maybe we saw that here. I don't know if the Shibatanis are planning on taking time off or not.
Yeah.
Time will tell on that. But, you know, judging from what we saw in Milano, you know, there really was, in my opinion, a breakthrough by Hubble and Donahue. And it's been kind of a long time coming. And honestly, I thought that if they didn't win a medal in Milano, it could very, very negatively impacted their career, but they did. And they really came through. And I really think they skated aggressively. They skated with a whole lot of confidence. And, you know, this could mark, you know, a real turning point in their career. And they could be up there, you know, competing for first place.
Yeah.
In the coming seasons.
I totally agree with that. I think Hubble and Donahue still have untapped potential. Of all the U.S. teams, I think they've got the most potential to just be incredibly powerful ice dance teams, and they just have that chemistry between them that really helps them just get into the program, get into what they're doing out there, and that's frankly where you see them falter, is that they kind of get into the programs a little too much sometimes. But like you said, they didn't hold back in Milano. They just continued to push the way that they've pushed all season, and they got that silver. I would say they have a chance to be contending for the gold, just like you said.
You know, getting back for a moment to how aggressive and confident they were, I kind of want to give a shout out to Patrice Lauzon, because I think that a lot of people talk about the training group in Quebec, and rightfully so. Many, many people credit Amari France with a lot of the creativity, a lot of the choreography, and really a lot of the success that group has had. But also, Patrice is the one that really, I think, drills Hubble and Donahue on a daily basis, and is really extremely picky about all the technical elements and the fact that, you know, they can't let, you know, their ability to live their performance, you know, get in the way of skating clean and skating very technically correct. I really think he's been instrumental this season in getting them to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason not to think that they're going to improve even more.
Yeah, agreed. Well, I mean, of course, their training mates, Papadakis and Cicerone, got their third title. I really thought that they skated in at the World Championships with just this ease that we didn't see at the Olympics, especially in that short program, obviously in the short dance with the wardrobe thing at the Olympics. But there's something a little bit different about them, probably with the weight of having Virtue and Moyer there not being there at Worlds. Did you see anything on the screen that maybe I didn't see in person that may have indicated anything different?
No, I would agree with you, but the Olympics was not 100% successful. I mean, when you go out there for your short dance and in the first few seconds, you know, the halter top rips off, that's going to color your entire performance. And I think it was a weight on them. So although they had a really good free dance at the Olympics, it just wasn't what they wanted, the whole event.
Yeah.
But here, I think you're right. I think they were freer, they were a bit looser, and they were really able to relax more.
Yeah.
So I think that they had their best programs here.
Yeah.
At Worlds.
And you know, we talk a lot about that wardrobe malfunction at the Olympics. I will go back and very much say that Virtue and Moyer certainly won it. There was nothing that they did that was not worthy of the gold medal there. When you talk about Papadakis and Cicerone and how their Olympics experience went, you can't not talk about what they started with, which was really just that wardrobe malfunction, which I at the press conference, she was like, yeah, we made sure that we basically sewed that thing shut. So there was to be no mishap at the World Championships.
I want to go on record and clarify something. I absolutely believe that Virtue and Moyer should have won the Olympics. They did win, and I think it was 100% the correct decision. The point that I made in a few articles was that even with the dress malfunction, the judges certainly were very, very high on the French short dance. And it's conceivable that had she not had that dress malfunction, they would have got, you know, two or three more points,
mm-hmm.
if not more, and they would have been in a position to win the Olympics. I would not have agreed with that decision,
yep.
but I was going by the past.
Right. So. Yeah.
Just wanted to get that off my chest.
I'm sure it's been on your chest for a while. But I felt like the we really had six teams at Worlds who skated programs that were worthy of medals. Unfortunately, we only had three who were able to stand on the podium. Tell me a little bit about Capellini and Linote and your thoughts on them. It was a very emotional competition for them, skating at home, probably their final competition. They were just a quarter point off the podium, and you know you could sense the Italian crowd going, okay, this is our last chance at a medal. Like, are we going to get it or not? What were your thoughts on them?
Well, it's karma because they won their world title by a hair, right? In I believe 2014, and now they were maybe on the other end of the spectrum, and they missed a medal, and Weaver and Poggé were able to get the bronze, and deservedly so. I mean, I thought Capellini and Linote's programs this year were really outstanding for them. They were mature programs, yet they were still not completely lighthearted, but not heavy,
mm-hmm.
Certainly not overly heavy in the free dance, although it was Life is Beautiful. I think it emphasize the romance of Life is Beautiful. You know, they're a great team. I always thought that perhaps they did not have quite the power and the edge quality of a few of the other top teams. So I thought that they had an excellent career, and their strongest point was their connection to the audience, and you know the fact that they really could deliver a very romantic, very entertaining free dance.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what I'll remember about them. And they were very memorable.
Yeah. A team I thought who skated really well at Worlds, but I thought it was a little bit underscored, were Chalk and Bates. I don't think I've seen them kind of give the two dances this season as much power and flow and passion as they did at the World Championships, and I expected them to be a little bit closer to the podium. What were your thoughts on them?
Well, I agree with you. I think that that was certainly probably the best short dance that they've delivered. They worked quite a bit on the short dance, and you know, it takes time, particularly in dance, to really absorb and get it out there organically. I think obviously the free dance was a whole lot more successful than it was, unfortunately, in Pyeongchang.
Yep.
They did have that disastrous fall. I would agree with you. You know, when you have such success in a country in ice dance, certainly the United States is enjoyed with their top three teams. Sometimes one team is going to get a little undermarked, in my experience. And unfortunately for them, I think that Chalk and Bates have been a little underappreciated. But I think they're going to continue next season. I certainly haven't heard that they're not. And I think that they still have an opportunity to, you know, reclaim the podium.
Yeah, I think they're starting to regain their stride again. Probably the last maybe season and a half. So yeah, we'll see what happens with them in the future. But you know, we don't know how retirements are going to shake out. Like you said, I mean, Papadakis and Cicerone and Hubble and Donahue are most certainly continuing on. Capolino Notte likely done, and then you've got, you know, the Chalk and Bates and Borova and Soloviev and Shibutani's and Weaver and Poje. You wonder if they're going to continue competing after this season. But then you know, you certainly have to look at some of the teams who made a splash here. Gilles Poirier and Stepanova and Bukin, 6th and 7th here, finishing really well. And Stepanova and Bukin would have been higher had they not had that invalidated lift in the short dance. So, you know, where do you think these teams are going to figure in? And then, you know, where do you think ice dance is heading after this season?
Obviously, it's going to be a lot of movement in ice dance. I think you hit it on the head. I think Stepanova and Bukin are a team that I would look to make a big move.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. I don't know what kept him out or them out of the Olympics. But, you know, hopefully it's a dead issue. I do think that they will establish themselves as the top Russian team. I believe Bobrova, Soloviev are retiring. At least Bobrova is. So I honestly would look for them to firmly challenge for the podium.
Yeah.
The other thing about ice dance is I really think that the ISU is making substantial changes to the rules. And we won't know everything until the technical handbook is published.
Yeah.
Has not been published yet. But, you know, they're talking about fairly substantial changes in how they judge the step sequences, changes to the step sequences themselves, adding a one-foot required step sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And also something that I think is just bound to cause a whole lot of agita, talking about adding a extra point bonus for an entertaining and colorful program. You know, just think, you know, what's entertaining to one person, not entertaining to another person.
If there's anything that screams subjective, it is entertaining and, what is it? And entertaining and...
Well, actually, they call it, let me be accurate. They called it enjoyable, colorful, and engaging.
Enjoyable, colorful, and engaging. There you go.
So that describes Capolini Lenote, who I believe may be retiring. But, you know, what's enjoyable, colorful, and engaging?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that one, I gotta say. that is so incredibly subjective. Like you said, the technical handbook hasn't come out yet, but some of the point of these ice dance rule changes coming up is supposed to be relaxing some of the more, you know, there have been people who have been talking about ice dance from program to program, the elements looking the same, and this was supposed to address that a little bit, right?
Yeah, I think that that's a goal, that's a continuous goal.
Yeah.
Sort of all the time, and maybe all the disciplines, but particularly ice dance. So I think that they're trying to shake things up, add a more choreographed sequences for a little more originality,
mm-hmm.
trying to encourage more creativity, and, you know, we'll see what happens. It's interesting. Let's put it that way.
We'll also have to get used to calling the short dance the rhythm dance from now on.
The rhythm dance. And, you know, what's interesting about that is next season is the tango.
Yeah.
The tango romantica
is
the pattern dance. And if couples are so inclined, they can just do tango. They don't have to mix it with another rhythm. So it doesn't have to be, you know, a tango and a samba or a tango and a cha-cha. It can be tango, period. And that's a little bit of a change as well.
Yeah, I cannot wait to watch the Despacito tangos that are going to come out next year. Okay.
Shout out just really quick to Caitlin Hiwack and Jean-Luc Baker, because when you talk about sort of the campaign that the U.S. figure skating has done for a couple of years, they've been one of the poster skaters for that. They've really had their ups and downs. They've had great performances. They've had, you know, maybe some disappointing performances where they've made a couple of mistakes, and they really hung in there.
Yeah.
Even though there was just a solid wall of talent ahead of them. And I think that, you know, a 10th place finish, I believe,
yep,
at their first Worlds, even with a little bit of trouble they had in the short dance.
A lot of
very
trouble.
Very positive for them.
Yeah. I mean, that fall was...
I was trying to be nice.
I mean, that fall, I talked to her afterwards, and she was like, I don't know. I think I hit a rut or I hit something on the ice, but she didn't blame it on that. She was like, I should have just kept my edge. I should have been stronger on my blade. And, you know, it goes to show kind of her mental strength, because that was one of the very first things they did in that program. And for them both to keep it together and skate the rest of the program cleanly and with the levels that they did, I think that was, you know, that was a testament to their will and their you know, themselves as competitors.
I agree, and I think that she's an intense, very hard worker.
Very much.
So, you know, we'll see if they can build on this. I think they can.
Yeah, agreed. Well, next up on our time reversal recap, the men's event. Okay, so that final...
The men's event,
yeah,
oh!
The final group of men, I have three letters for you, OMG.
I'm actually just falling off my chair thinking about it. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. It was not a stellar event, let's be honest.
Well, not a stellar last group. I got to say the couple of groups preceding them were really good, actually.
You are 100% right. And, you know, there were some, what I would call, well, I'm going to call them unsung heroes.
Yeah.
And, of course, probably other people are singing about them.
Yeah.
But to me, they're little unsung heroes that really did skate well. And one of them was Kazuka Tumano.
Oh my gosh, he was so good.
You know, he was a revelation. And, you know, here's this guy. He was fourth, I believe, in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And he went out and helped them get three spots.
Yep. And finished fifth in the world. I mean, it was...
And finished fifth in the world. So, you know, I thought he was definitely an up-and-coming story that we can see at this world.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it wasn't perfect, but it was a positive experience for Max Aaron.
Yep.
And he certainly, you know, he came through with the free skate. And he helped Nathan save the three spots for the U.S. And if he is going to retire, that's a great note to go out on.
Yeah. Yeah, again, I mean, we thought he was going to retire after Four Continents when he skated really well. And then he got kind of called back and it was like, oh, okay, I guess I need to figure this out again. And he figured it out. I mean, I'll tell you, both Kazuki Tomono and Max Aaron in practice all week when I was watching them were having a lot of trouble. I mean, just trying to get on top of the ice. Kazuki Tomono especially was just popping quad sow cows left and right and didn't look like he was even gonna be competitive for the top 15, and he goes out and skates two clean programs. And Max Aaron was just having some really scary falls on Quad Tsaukao's. You know how he falls. Like, when he falls, he gets like splatters all over the ice. So for him to keep two Quad Tsaukao's in the short and in the free skate, like for him to stand up on those was just so, it was so good for him mentally that I think the rest of the program was like, okay, I got this.
You know, go a little bit deeper, and Denis Vasiliev.
Yep.
I'm probably mispronouncing
that. Nope, you got it.
I thought that, you know, this was a big uptick from the Olympics.
Yep.
And it's kind of funny because I believe he's coached by Stefan Lambiel. And at the Olympics, he was having problems with his triple axel. And I was talking to Stefan, and he said, oh, I know what's wrong with this triple axel, and he's dropping his shoulder too much, and we're going to fix that for Worlds. And I thought, well, I'm not going to be a bigger jerk than I usually am. I'm not going to remind Stefan that, you know, his triple axel when he was skating was, you know, his weak point. So I didn't. But obviously, they did fix it.
Yeah.
In a way, because I thought it looked a whole lot stronger at Worlds, and, you know, his PCS was also had improved. So I thought that, you know, he was another one that I think really sort of put his best foot forward there.
Yeah, I mean,
and, you know, so he was a story.
Yeah, for sure. Denis Vasiliev was super good. I mean, he decided to ditch the quad. He was trying to work on that all season to get in the program, but he ditched the quad and did two clean no quad programs to finish sixth. So there you go.
There you go. You didn't want to go even deeper. See Keegan Messing skate in the final group at Worlds was a pleasure. And, you know, he wasn't, again, perfect in the free skate, especially. He had a great short, I thought. And he helped get two spots for Canada. They didn't lose a spot.
Right.
So, you know, he kind of did his job.
Yeah.
So there was a lot going on there in addition to certainly the main story being Nathan Chen coming to the fore and dominating the competition.
Yeah, I'll add a couple more names to that list too. Misha G, absolutely going to be his final competition after that kind of fake out.
Do we
last
know
year.
That?
We know that.
Okay,
that's it for him, and he goes out with a bang, a top 10 finish. Mikhail Brezhne also skated probably the best free skate I've seen from him in many years.
That's true too.
Alexander Meyerhoff, after, you know, the Swedish Olympic Committee unceremoniously left him off the Olympic team because he couldn't get some unbelievably crazy score that he needed to get during the season to qualify. Like he had a great last two skates at Worlds. Who knows if Brezhne and Meyerhoff and Max Aaron, who knows if they're gonna continue on after this? But, you know, if that was it for them, what a great way to go out.
Yeah, I would agree, certainly. And, you know, you had some disappointments.
Yeah, a few,
to put it mildly.
Yeah,
but, you know, certainly. Vincent Joe was not looking for that kind of free skate, to understate the situation.
Yeah.
You got a lot of under rotation calls, and he's still out getting Boyang Jin.
Oh,
who,
man.
You know, had a terrible time out there. So those were sort of two, let's be honest, shocking disappointments.
Oh, incredibly shocking. I mean, you should have seen me live streaming this on the plane and, like, basically waking up my neighbors because I was just, I don't know what I was doing, but I was just out of my mind being like, what the heck is going on in this final group? I mean, we've seen this before, right? That this season that where there are rough skates from the top guys in the world, but you got to think about where we are in the season, and there are people talking about, you know, is it too much technically? Is it post-Olympic fatigue? There's probably bits and pieces of those going on here, but you have to remember, like, Shoma Uno and and Vincent Zhou were both pretty injured, with Shoma's ankle problem, trying to break in new skates, and he wasn't even doing the quad flip in the short program, and he felt good enough 2 days later to put it back into the free skate, but it just wasn't working. And then you got Vincent Zhou, who didn't talk about his back all week, and you know Vincent's personality, that he does not want that to be the thing that kind of is the headline, you know, like, oh, injured Vincent Zhou is trying to compete. But like, you know, you could see that, you know, he talked about it after the competition ended, but you could see it affecting him in practices when he was trying to go for that quad toe. His lower back was just not cooperating with him. So, you know, there were a lot of circumstances that led to that. It was an incredibly shocking, shocking, shocking final group. And, you know, no more shocking than Bo Yang Jin. I think his free skate with five falls was just, I couldn't believe how much it snowballed toward the end there.
Yeah, and I actually was able to have a pretty lengthy interview with Vincent just prior to his departure for Milano, and his back was fine at that point. This was in the week or 2 weeks before, and he was really looking for big things. So, you know, it's bad timing in a way,
mm-hmm.
but you know, obviously he's a very ambitious skater. He doesn't back down from his content. And I know that he, you know, really sees Beijing 4 years from now as his chance to shine.
Yeah.
And this is a bump in the road, but I think he'll probably emerge from it stronger, because he is very, very determined. If there is a flaw, it is perhaps that he puts too much pressure on himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To go out there and deliver. You know, I don't know if that played into this. You know, he is 17 years old. And, you know, a little more experienced, hopefully good health. And I think we could still see big things from him next season.
Yeah. I do want to go back to the short program a little bit. We did see some great skates there, and my favorite there was Mikhail Koyada's short program. I mean, what a difference it was for him to just play by the percentages and take out that quad lutz, because you look at him training the quad lutz and he's probably about 25-30% on hitting that jump in practice, so it's tough for him to get it in competition. But, you know, It was a beautiful skate, and for me, it was actually the skate of the short program. It came behind Nathan Chen's short program on the virtue of Nathan's, you know, higher base value. But I thought Mikhail really hit it out of the ballpark there.
I do agree with you, and I do think, however, this was a case of this particular short program not have been a top three short program had all the top men from the Olympics been there.
Yeah, that's probably why he played it safe for Worlds, probably knowing that that would have been the case.
Absolutely, absolutely. And he did the right thing.
Yeah.
I guess I'm so used to having seeing two quads in a short program that I've become a little jaded. And my initial reaction was, I saw the protocol, I saw the results before I watched the event. I watched it taped, and I thought, well, how the heck is he so close to Nathan? He didn't do two quads in mm-hmm. short. And then I watched it, and I thought, well, you know what, that was a pretty damn good program. In retrospect, you know, you're right. And I think that, you know, he had took a little pressure off, he was more relaxed, and you know, he might want to look at this for next season, you know, strategize. If he can be a bit more consistent in the short, you know, he may get even better results.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, talking about Nathan's short, his program, of course, was miles better than anything he could put down in the Olympics in the short program. There was more attack there. I just thought, you know, especially when I went back to the replay, I was surprised that his flip didn't get called under. And, you know, didn't affect the overall anyway since he won by 50 points, but
right.
It was definitely an example of some of that inconsistent technical panel calling that I saw both in the men's and the ladies event. But, you know, I got to say, with Nathan's short program, I just feel like that was a brilliant program that we never really got to see its full potential because things were being shifted around all season. And that, you know, the one that we saw at Skate America, that version of it was probably the best that we had seen him perform that program. But for him at Worlds, it was really about getting the kind of monkey off his back of getting that the three jumps completed, and that's what he did. And then, you know, it was all she wrote.
I agree 100%. I think that he was another skater like Hubble and Donahue that really had to win Worlds in order to get, as you say, the monkey off his back, get a little more confident. Not that he's not confident, but what happened at the Olympics in his short programs had to have taken a toll.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you talked to him after his free skate, you know, obviously he won the free skate, you could sense he was relieved that he skated a good free skate, but he was disappointed because he knew if he had laid down, you know, even for him, a mediocre short, he certainly would have been on the podium and he probably would have had a good chance to win. And I think all the experimenting with the different jumps and the different layouts in his programs this season was pointing toward the Olympic gold medal and the ambition of his program to have a six quad free skate. Obviously he was going for it and it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the way it happens. Sometimes it happens to the best of them, but to turn around, to come to Worlds, to skate, not perfectly, but skate very strong.
Yeah.
And to win by that margin, that is definitely going to heal a bit of the disappointment of the Olympics, although I still think it will linger for a while because
yeah.
I think he will probably remember it as a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, he ended up being the almost undefeated men's skater of the season. The only thing that he did not win this season was the Olympics. So,
and the only thing he didn't win there was the individual short program.
Right, exactly.
That really even takes his disappointment up to another level. But
right.
You know, I was having this conversation with another figure skating person the other day, and you know, there's still a strong chance that he could dominate the sport the next couple of seasons. You know,
yeah.
we'll see what his college plans are, but
yeah. We'll see what his college plans are. We'll see how his quads hold up. We'll see how, you know, let's hopefully everybody is taking a well-deserved break because, you know, Nathan's had some ails this season. Shoma Uno with that ankle that, you know, it was
yeah.
So tough to watch him in practice because he, you know, you see him in practice and he's always smiling and just having a good time. And he was trying to smile through what was obviously a very painful ankle because for Shoma Uno to not be doing jumps, it means that something is going on, right? Something's going wrong. And, you know, it was fortunate that he was able to still do, you know, the axle and the quad toe pretty well, but you know, without the quad flip, it was really tough for him to string together two programs that would have gotten him to the top of the podium. And so, you know, he fought through it like a champ and got the silver. And you know, you hope that he's going to rest himself up a little bit or a lot in this off season. You know, everybody just needs to just take a break, I think.
Yeah, no, he's a great competitor and he gutted it out. And, you know, he's another one that when he falls, he can fall very, very hard.
Yeah.
So I think he's probably relieved.
Yeah.
The season's over.
Agreed. Well, Surprises, surprises. I was talking about Bo Yang Jin as the huge surprise in the men's event. But the last two skaters of the ladies' free skate just shocked the entire audience. I think I spent about 20 minutes with my jaw dropped and my hands on my head being like, what? I was speechless. And you know what? It takes a lot for me to be speechless. But Alina Zagitova and Karolina Kostner both making huge multiple errors in front of our very eyes, and both were off the podium. What did you think of that whole thing?
Well, talking about Zagitova first, I think that this was a clear instance of the backloading of her program worked great at the Olympics. It worked great at Europeans. It didn't work for her here. I thought clearly her stamina gave way and she just did not look strong enough to push through all of those jumping passes in the second half. So that goes to show you that you can risk that, but it's a huge risk and it isn't going to work all the time. And we saw that it kind of backfired. The backloading backfired a bit. I think if she'd had a few of those jumping passes early in the program, she probably would have been able to fight through them and get onto the podium at least. You know, she just did not look, to my way, my eye, she just was not getting the spring on her jumps. And she just did not look really, she looked tired.
I'm not really sure about tiredness as I was more about her just being incredibly nervous, and we have not seen that from her all season, especially in the later parts of the season. I remember going back to her press conferences at the Olympics and her saying, "I'm just taking this like any other competition." And you know, a lot of people try to say that and they don't really do that, and it was like that for her. The Olympics didn't really make the kind of like pressure packed situation that it does for, like, you know, 99% of the skaters, that it did for her. And I think that helped her at Worlds after the short program. You know, everybody was like, "So, you know, how are you feeling? Why'd you make the mistake in the short program?" She was like, "Well, to be honest with you, I was really nervous out there." For me, looking at her free skate, it was so much about her, you know, not feeling like herself. And then once she made that first jump error, it was like, okay, she just had no idea how to do the rest of the program anymore. You know, obviously it's like speculation about the backloading. I would have thought that even had she had three jumping passes in the beginning and four in the end, that I don't know if she could have regrouped herself. I think she was just that shell-shocked about that first mistake that it would have taken her, you know, 20 minutes to recover from that shock of that moment of her making the mistake.
That could be. She may have felt the nerves more. She did not appear to be nervous at the Olympics at all.
Right.
I think that she did say, you know, "Yes, I'm nervous, but I'm able to deal with it." It could be she felt even more pressure having won so many events this season to sort of top it off at Worlds. And mm-hmm. Maybe the pressure got to her. I don't know, though. I still think that she just did not go into her jumps with the same kind of aggression.
Yeah.
The same kind of confidence, the same kind of spring that I've seen her. And I think, you know, with the backloading of the jumps, you know, if you miss one, to your point, it's a whole lot harder to recover, to gather yourself,
mm-hmm.
because there's no time. I mean, she's doing the bang, 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 bang.
Yeah.
So, you know, I will stick with my opinion that this sort of highlights the risk, you know, when you're going to do something as extreme as what she did.
Yeah.
But she certainly was not herself.
No,
she,
for sure.
Was it kind of in that free skate shadow, I thought, of the skaters she has been all season.
Yeah. And you got to think about Karolina Kostner, too, who skated, you know, right after, and closing out the ladies' free skate and probably knowing that, well, definitely knowing what Alina Zagitova just did, But probably knowing that if she skated even like a five triple program, she probably would have won the Olympics, the World Championships. And her just going out there, doubling that first Lutz, and then again, that was that. I mean, she did not look herself. In the short program, she looked like the invincible Carolina Costner that we thought we were going to see at Worlds. And it wasn't even about her stamina in the free skate here. It was just that she just had nerves, I think, of skating in front of this home crowd and knowing that it was that close for her to win that world title.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you a bit. I thought she had a wonderful short. But it did not surprise me in the least that she had a disappointing free skate. Carolina has had a lot of ups and downs in her career, and there have definitely been times when she's underperformed in her home country. Certainly
Torino.
2006.
Yep.
Torino is one of them. And, you know, I think that she was able to hold it together and come out there in the short, but to be candid, I would have been surprised if she had skated a great free in addition to the short.
Yeah.
I thought that she was perhaps a little overmarked at the Olympics. I didn't think her free was one of her better performances there.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect that with the added pressure of delivering in Milano that she would necessarily skate great. So I think it was a great moment for her in the short, but, you know, frankly, I was not surprised.
I think I was most surprised that she didn't start off the program well, because that's what she usually does with the free skate, is that she skates generally pretty well in the first half, and then it's the second half that falls apart because she just doesn't she doesn't have enough of that stamina to get through it. But either way, it was very disappointing for her, for the home crowd. But hey, she made a moment in the short program that nobody's ever going to forget. So
that's absolutely,
she'll have that. Caitlin Osman taking her first world title and a come from behind victory. What do you make of her season and, you know, kind of what she's been able to prove to herself?
Well, you know, quite obviously this has been just a breakout season for Caitlin. I've thought that she's one of the top two skaters in the world for a long time. And, you know, maybe what was holding her back was certainly the severe injury that she had a couple of seasons ago, breaking her leg. That would hold anybody back. Coming back from that, I think she's been very candid and very open that, you know, getting back into the swing of competition was difficult after that injury. And I think that, you know, she held back a bit. I think that, you know, maybe, you know, she lacked the confidence that she certainly should have had with her skills. And also working with her speed, working with her power, I think was perhaps a challenge. You know, getting control of her jumps, because she has so much power. She jumps so big that sometimes she would maybe lose it. And I think it kind of all came together for her this season. You know, again, she's been very open about working with a sports psychologist. You know, her coach, Ravi Walia, has been very open about her challenges when she's practicing, you know, to practice controlling her emotions, controlling her jumps. And I think with, you know, obviously years now of working top, I think this was really a spectacular season for her.
Yeah, absolutely spectacular. Now, 3 Olympic medals, 2 world championship medals, plus, you know, including this world title. This is probably as much of a dream season as it could have been for Caitlin Osman. And you could see the surprise in her face when she found out that she won. It was just like, what? I didn't, you know, she probably expected a silver at best, especially after that short program. And so it was very much a surprise for her.
It was a surprise, but, you know, it almost shouldn't have been a surprise.
Yeah.
In a way, with all her talent and with her ability.
Right. You know, and then you got the two Japanese women going 2-3. Wakaba Higuchi had probably my absolute favorite free skate of that whole group. You know, she was left off the Olympic team after a couple of, you know, just not so great competitions in December. And so, she, you know, she had all kinds of redemption with that world silver medal. And then she just blew everybody away. I was not so much surprised. I was just really impressed by her, you know, having that fire and that just desire to prove herself again after not being able to get on the Olympic team. And so, you know, that world silver is going to be fantastic for her. And then Satoko Miyahara getting another world medal. She probably got off the ice after the free skate thinking that she had thrown her medal chances in the trash, but then got the bronze because of what happened after her. And, you know, a great finish for the Japanese women, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, Higuchi, now, obviously she did have a fall in the short program, I probably should note. But I thought that she was just spectacular in the free skate.
Yeah.
You know, she was just aggressive. She went for everything. She attacked the program. I love the program.
Yeah.
If anything, I thought that she was underscored.
I generally
don't say that.
Yeah.
About a competition, but I felt that, you know, for her to get the PCS that she got, was not correct.
Yeah, I have felt like her free skate has been underscored all season long. I really love how it's composed and the way that she attacks it, like you said. And, you know, 145, I think that's what she got here. I thought that, like you said, I think that's still too low for that performance.
I thought it was too low. I think it was about 5 points lower in PCS than Osmond, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm not, much as I love Osmond, I'm not sure that
it's five points.
It was correct.
Yeah.
I don't think that was quite correct.
Right.
But still, she did have that fall in the short, so it's not that I'm saying she should have won. But I think I think that hopefully the judges will come around toward appreciating her aggression, her strength. She's strong. She's strong. She's not a wilting violet there.
Yeah, for sure.
So that was one thing I didn't agree with.
Yeah, Satoko Miyahara, with all the things that she's gone through this season, with the injuries, with the bone density issues, for her to finish up her season with a fourth place at the Olympics and then a bronze in at the World Championships was probably a great thing for her. I don't think she probably would have expected to even be where she is at this point, given the troubles that she had earlier this season.
Yeah, she's probably very happy with her final competitions here. And, you know, again, I don't want to emphasize this too much, but the two Japanese ladies certainly got three ladies for Japan.
Yes.
And that was something that they needed. It's unfortunate they didn't have three ladies at the Olympics, perhaps.
Yeah.
But they got it now for Worlds next season.
Yeah. You also heard Wakaba talk about that in after silver medal win, that she was saying, like, well, you know, I didn't go to the Olympics because I was responsible for not getting the three spots on the Olympic team for Japan last season. And so, you know, there was a little bit of that deja vu of Ashley Wagner in 2010 being like, well, I was at Worlds, you know, the year before, and I was responsible for not getting that third spot. So, you know, that's why I didn't go to the Olympics, and that's what I have to fight through. And so I think so much of her being here was so much about just redeeming herself and making sure that she can figure out how to skate her best at a competition like Worlds.
Oh, absolutely. I thought that she came through in spectacular fashion, and I thought Miyahara was very, very good. A few of her jumps, perhaps, again, I'm not a caller, as I say all the time, they were perhaps a little tight.
Yeah, and they were a lot tight.
Yeah.
Kind of back to what I was talking about with Nathan's flip in the short, you know, there were a couple of jumps there that I thought could have been called. It was a tough panel in the ladies event, period. And you know, I just, it didn't sit right with me, but, you know, it is what it is. And that's what happened. So.
Yeah, I don't know if she can work on that. If she can build perhaps a little more physical strength and work on that, because that's really the only thing that you can criticize her for.
What happened with her too is, you know, during practice all week, she had been skating fairly well, especially the first day I saw her practice with the rotations. But it was, for whatever reason, in that free skate, her taps were just off. You could see her just, her ankle kind of collapsing a bit on her taps, and she didn't get the height that she would usually get on that Lutz, especially. And so,
well, she doesn't have any height to spare.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Yeah, just a little bit of a mistap, and you know, that's kind of the thing that happens with her jumps. So that's the ladies
well,
for you.
She was able to medal. So
yeah, exactly. Well, we have so much more to talk about. Just like lots and lots of stuff happening with all of the disciplines. But let's move on to the pairs. I'm going to say two words, and you tell me what you think. Aliona Savchenko.
Amazing. I remember when I heard that Aliona was going to continue with a new partner with Bruno. I believe I heard this 4 years ago now.
Yep.
I thought that she would never retain the world title. And I've never been more wrong about anything in my anything figure skating related in my life. I think that she's improved. I think that she's a better skater now than she was for all those years with Rob. Even though she won 5 world titles with Robin Sulcowy, I would argue that she's perhaps better than she's ever been. And I thought that, you know, they were spectacular. I thought they were spectacular at the Olympics, and I thought they were spectacular. And there's, you know, a whole hell of a lot more I could say.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about the crowd earlier. I think this was very much an instance where I thought the electricity from this crowd pushed Aliona and Bruno to skate an even more spectacular free skate here at Worlds than they did at the Olympics. Their elements were not quite as well done as they were at the Olympics. You know, the two throws she had to fight for the landings, but, you know, they were both 1 foot and clean. That said, the performances themselves were stronger at Worlds than they were at the Olympics. And I never thought that I would be able to see that free skate skated better than it was at the Olympics, and I did, and it was just amazing to see live.
Yeah, I did not see Worlds live. I saw the Olympic performances live, so I thought the Olympics performance was perhaps better than Worlds. Again, it's a completely different situation when you're seeing it live.
Mm-hmm.
They were both fantastic.
Yeah.
And I guess the question is, you know, do they continue from here? You know, certainly Bruno's back was giving him trouble all season.
Right.
At Skate America in particular, he was in tremendous pain. He said that the pain alleviated at the Olympics, but I know it is troublesome to him. I don't know if they're going to continue or not, but I've heard in the German press that she would like to.
Yeah, I have heard the same. You know, it's Aliona Savchenko, so you never know what's going to happen with her. Like you said, I think with Bruno Masso, the biggest impediment potentially is going to be the injury problems that he's had, and whether or not he wants to continue working the way that he has been working for the last 4 years. And so, you know, I guess we'll see. Figure skating fans would love to see them continue. I would love to see them continue. But, you know, ultimately up to the skaters. But, you know, with the exception of Savchenko and Masso, it wasn't a particularly clean final group final couple of groups, really, of the free skate. But the podium was right. Tarasova Morozov winning silver, James and Cypre taking their first world medal with bronze. What did you think of those two?
Starting with James and Cypre, I think that, as a few of the other skaters I mentioned, I think that it was really now or never for them at Worlds. So I was real happy to see them come through and win that medal. And, you know, they've improved so much the last few seasons working in Florida with John Zimmerman and Jeremy Barrett. And I think a lot of that is due to, you know, really increased training time, you know, getting very, very, very serious. And also working with, you know, choreographers like John Kerr. Certainly, John Zimmerman's been able to sort of help them with their program components, you know, as well as their elements. And everything has really come together for them this season. So to cap that with a world medal, beautiful. Tarasova and Morozov, you know, again, you want to love them because I just think that technically that they're superb and they're very clean skaters. You know, I kind of sound like I'm running with the crowd and I kind of sound like a broken record here, but they really need better material. And, you know, if they're going to fight it out with Shui and Han for the next few years for world titles, I think they really got to elevate their game in terms of particularly their free skate material.
I thought their short program this year was good material for them.
I thought their short program was great.
Yeah, yeah.
But a short program is only going to get you so far.
Yep.
Especially in the pairs event where it's packed like this. And to have a program like the Candyman program, and it wasn't just the music, it was the sort of the level of the choreography, the level of the sophistication. To put that up against what skaters like Aliona and Bruno, Shui and Han, and a few other couples did, it just really just did not do them any favors.
Yeah.
And they've got all the ability in the world to do great stuff out there. So, you know, hopefully things will change in that regard.
Yeah. Hopefully so. I don't see them stopping anytime soon. We'll see.
No.
We'll see.
Nor should they.
Yeah. And we'll see if whether or not Stolbova and Klimov come back after not being able to go to the Olympics and then withdrawing from Worlds. You know, Russia has very strong pairs, so you know we'll see where that goes.
Russia has strong pairs. That they will have three pairs, as usual.
Yeah.
I mean, Zabiyako and Enbird have, I think, still an upside.
Yeah, for sure.
I think they could still improve and achieve more. Now China, it's interesting. They will only have two pairs at Worlds next season, I believe, unless I did my math wrong.
You're right.
So that'll be a challenge to qualify for the Chinese team.
Yeah.
But I think I think we will see Shui and Han and Tarasova and Morozov battle for the world title, particularly obviously if the Germans don't compete next season.
Right. Well, and it was very close between 4th and 10th, less than 6 points separating those six teams.
I mean,
we're so used to that now. We're so used to this just nail biter of a pairs event at Worlds, just because everybody is just so freaking good. And, you know, between 4th and 10th, you've got two Italian pairs who may or may not continue after this season. You've got a Canadian pair who surprisingly were the only Canadians to qualify for the free skate in the pairs event. You know, it's pretty crazy what that pairs event ended up being. Who else stood out to you in that group?
Actually, I think the Canadians, Kirsten Moore Towers and Michael Marinara, they were sort of my breakout pick at the very beginning of the season because I think she's a tremendous character. I think she's, you know, really got a lot of personality on the ice. I think you know, she's got solid jumps, and I think she's really, really strong. And I think that he's come up to her level more. I think maybe when they started, she was definitely the leader of the pair, and perhaps still is, but he's improving. And I think that they show that they're going to be a force. I think that maybe they were slow to gel. She had, I believe, a severe concussion problem. But I think they have a chance to challenge for the podium.
Yeah.
In the next season or so.
Well, we'll see what happens next season. It was very much an eventful World Championships, folks. And a big thank you to Lynn Rutherford, not just for being on the podcast today, but for everything that you have done this season to cover figure skating from the pre-season to the finish line with me here. So thank you, Lynn.
I'm going to thank you. I'm going to thank everybody that reads my articles, thank everybody that follows me and interacts with me on Twitter, because I've loved every moment of it.
Well, fantastic. That is it for our World Recap for episode 68 of Ice Talk. If you are having figure skating withdrawal, because we all are having that, you know you can always go back and listen to our treasure trove of interviews from the past two seasons. Go to icenetwork.com under the fans page, or go find us on Apple Podcasts. Ice Talk is produced by Kate Sullivan and edited by Mickey Brown. From the Ice Network Studios in downtown Manhattan, I'm Jackie Wong. Stay cool, and we'll talk to you again next week.